You're listening to the Hayek Program Podcast. This podcast includes audio from lectures, interviews, and discussions from scholars and visitors of the F.A. Hayek Program for Advanced Study in Philosophy, Politics, and Economics at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To learn more about the Hayek Program, visit hayek.mercatus.org. To learn about graduate student fellowship opportunities with the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, for students at Mason as well as at universities across the globe, please visit students.mercatus.org.
Hi, and welcome to the Hayek Program Podcast. I'm Stephanie Halfley, a senior fellow with the Hayek Program, and today I'm talking with Crystal Dozier, an associate professor and archaeologist at Wichita State University, and Carolina Dalla Chiesa, an assistant professor of cultural economics and organizations at Erasmus University Rotterdam. We discuss their chapters in our book, Living Better Together, Social Relations and Economic Governance in the Work of Ostrom and Zelizar, edited by myself and Virgil Storr. We also talk about interdisciplinary research and exploring important questions in the social sciences. I hope you enjoy.
Thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us here.
Absolutely. Thank you. So we'll kind of dig right into the kind of first questions. This edited volume is something that we put together over the past several years. With the Hayek Program, we've engaged with the work of Eleanor Ostrom for quite some time. And in the past several years, I've gotten to know and engage with the ideas of Viviana Zelizar a bit more. So after she came and did a lecture at George Mason, we wanted to get an edited volume together that really looked at those works and looked at them together in an interesting way. So that's kind of how this project came about. So we looked for an interdisciplinary setting of authors to dig into these ideas. And both of your work add great context to the edited volume. Carolina's chapter with her co-authors really looks at combining the two works of Ostrom and Zelizar, what that means interdisciplinary and how you use it. And then Crystal's chapter applies this work to archaeology in a field that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think are common interlocators that we could work with, but her work really brings in a lot of these ideas. So kind of thank you both for that. Just to get us started, how familiar were you with Eleanor Ostrom and Viviana Zelizar's work before the project? Carolina, do you want to give it a start?
So in fact, I got to know of Zelizar's work prior to Ostrom. So I had a master's training in anthropology, cultural anthropology, where I focused mostly on economic anthropology in forms of economic governance, but understood from the lenses of anthropology, economic sociology, and of course, the work of Zelizar is fundamental there. And so I studied things like, for example, Mikhail Polanyi, Viviana Zelizar, all the tradition of economic sociology and financial markets. So how am I familiar with it? I could definitely say that I was even more familiar with Viviana Zelizar than Ostrom for a certain period. And then I delved into Ostrom's work also for my PhD. So this is where things got connected. And by the way, this is an excellent opportunity. This book was an excellent opportunity to put things together. And I'm very glad you actually did that, Stephanie. So I could say quite familiar, but I wouldn't say, I mean, I certainly couldn't claim myself any sort of expert on Viviana Zelizar or economic sociology in general, but I find her approach extremely fundamental to understand economic governance outside the lens of traditional mainstream economics. So it can give interesting complements to the understanding of how traditional economics understand exchanges, markets, and also non-market ways of interacting with each other. So I think in general, that's it. This is how I got to know her. I got to know her from anthropology, but I never met her in person. I wished I was also there in the workshop, in the seminars last year, but I couldn't join because of teaching schedule. So very sorry.
They actually came from this the opposite way of Carolina. So I was much more familiar with the work of Eleanor Ostrom. And I think this has to do because I come from archaeology. And so it was more of that ecological resource, common pool resource research that the archaeology side of anthropology clings on to. So I was familiar with Ostrom's work on polycentricity, and I'd always been attracted to the idea that her work is really situated in time and place and contextualizing economic exchange. And I really appreciated that also while I was working on my dissertation. And so I was really introduced to the work of Zelizer through working on this project, which was really fun for me also to be able to dive into related work that I feel like I should have known, but for whatever reason, our disciplinary walls held me from this kind of perspective. Coming again, her background in sociology meant that I did not approach it in archaeology. So yeah. I took this research project as the opportunity to get to know the work more and really delve into, can our disciplines use the same language because we're using such different scales of interaction, right? Our data sets look very different. But I appreciate the approach from both of their lenses, and putting them together was a really fun way to, again, contextualize economic exchange, and especially in non-traditional market situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting to see how many more kind of familiar and useful scholars and work that we can look when we look outside of our interdisciplinary boundaries. It's one of those where it's like that kind of surprise of like, why didn't I know this research before? Which can sometimes just be a frustrating, but also exciting because it means there's a lot more connections we can make over time by kind of crossing those boundaries. Both talked a little bit about kind of, you know, what you've enjoyed and taken from some of this work, but what would you say is the most kind of most important aspects to glean from this research, and particularly of bringing them together?
What I appreciate about putting Ostrom and Zelizer together is the recognition that there are different levels of processes going on in economic exchange. And what I really appreciate is that both of these approaches emphasize that you do not need to put a monetary amount on exchange in order to study these human systems. I also really appreciate that both of them really emphasize fieldwork and data. So both of their approaches are really situated in context. So when you read either of their works, you're doing a really interesting deep dive using solid cultural anthropological methods, whether it's participant observation or it's extended interviews. It really digs into being able to get data from individuals. Moreover, I really appreciate that the kind of individuals that this kind of work focuses on are not the ones that are modeled in more traditional economics, right? So both of them are focusing on the economics of household exchange, women's work, ecological management in areas of the world that are not the Western industrialized sections. I think it's important to emphasize that economic exchange happens everywhere and is not limited to what we see on, you know, the economic podcasts of what the Dow is doing. And so I really appreciate putting these two together because they're also working at different levels, right? Ostrom is looking more at higher level systems, and Zelizer is looking at individual networks. And so in that way, I really appreciated the way that they complement each other and yet had a lot of similarities in terms of their approach.
I think the reasons why I also liked to put both bodies of work together or pretty similar to Crystal. In fact, I could say that definitely one of the reasons is also finding a commonality between institutional economics and economic sociology using fieldwork, and having also a very concrete way to show the relevance of, for example, ethnographic work and fieldwork to understand economic exchange, and here economic exchange not simply bounded by monetary transactions, as Crystal also mentioned, but all non-monetary transactions, mainly in how money becomes also a symbol in that regard. So I think this is for sure one thing that Zelizer puts forward quite clearly, the role of the symbolic meanings of money, which certainly from a very mainstream economics perspective, we don't deal with it, right? It's not the... The discipline doesn't talk about it, at least from its early stages. And when we put that together with Ostrom, I find it very interesting how we can combine then this higher level analysis, higher level ecological analysis with the way people interact in regards to their meaning. To me, the most important takeaway is how meaning is fundamental for economic exchange, and therefore how those will create certain rules and use, rules of the game, forms of institutions, formal or informal, that would, in a way, are fundamental for both works, so both for Zelizer and for Ostrom. So I think as key takeaway messages for me are, number one, the idea of fieldwork, slash also doing, as Crystal mentioned, tools of cultural anthropology, so ethnography, for example, participant observation. And most importantly, the fact that economic exchange has meaning, and this meaning produces also stabilized structures, which can be seen as institutions, either formal or informal. In a way, putting them together means that we combine a higher level organization with how networks of individuals relate. So we can only gain from these two perspectives being put together, in my opinion. I think it's very hard to do both at the same time. For example, I think methodologically, one can inform the other and vice versa, but I think it's also a challenge to do everything all at once in a fieldwork. We actually have to do long fieldwork to provide answers that both put together. So in a nutshell, I think those are the main key takeaways I take from that.
Excellent. Thank you. Kind of moving on to your chapters and the contributions you had in the book, sort of what motivated you to tackle the topic you did? And what's kind of one thing that you would hope a listener first would get out of your chapter, and then hopefully be able to dig in and read it as well?
So what motivated me to tackle this topic in my chapter? I think I would say that it starts from personal reasons. So my personal academic trajectory is also interdisciplinary, right? So I did studies in anthropology, did in economics, I finished my PhD in cultural economics, and now I'm working with cultural economics. So I kind of combine different perspectives in economics, both seeing it from a mainstream view too, but also most importantly, understanding economic phenomena from a non-mainstream perspective. So I think from a personal point of view, it was very important for me to realize that there is something beyond the feudalism of academia, in the sense that we have like one field and the other field working separately and doing separate things, and they're never together, they don't combine. And I think this is just so not true. So I deeply believe in the need to combine perspectives whenever possible, and realize that in other domains, people have been doing long-term field work or whatever other perspective, it could be beneficial for us. And so my first motivation is, I would say, motivation of interdisciplinarity for sure. I am interdisciplinary myself, and I want to put forward the idea that we can pursue this route in academic writing, and also see there are important bridges between these domains. And secondly, I think it's a hanging fruit that institutional economics and economic sociology get together. So it motivates me to build the bridge and help building the bridge and continue the conversation which is, on the one hand, you could say a selfish reasoning related to, well, how this is going to impact my work, because this is also the work I do. But more than that, it's for the community of academics to realize ways to bridge gaps between disciplines. In general, this was my motivation, also the motivation my colleagues had. So my colleagues in the chapter, my co-authors, have a similar backgrounds too. They also have interdisciplinary approaches. And for all of us, it was also a discovery. It was a learning process to do the chapter. We learned from it. And if we can get good insights out of it, and if we can provide good insights for other people, this is the best we can hope. I think one of the best things we can hope out of this publication.
Excellent. If you wanted, if you could kind of think about a question that you would want listeners and readers to have after digging into your work that looked at combining these two and kind of the fruit that comes from combining economic sociology and institutional analysis, kind of what's that kind of question to go on to next that you would want them to be able to kind of get inspired by from the piece?
I think the question being a little bit, I'm not sure if it's narrow, too narrow, but people who would read the chapters might get the idea, or if not, then, we just continue the discussion. But simply the fact that rules in use can be understood from the perspective of meaning. So with that background, I would put forward a question of how does meaning influence institutional formats, formal or informal, so that the rules in use respond to that. So in this way, I would try to connect the idea of a form of governance with the idea of meanings. Question then for future researchers, people interested in this topic, would be, well, what are the ways in which forms of governance are conduct driven, supported by meanings of exchange between individuals? And I think this is a necessary question, given that more work needs to go into combining the approaches of meanings of economic exchange with governance, formats of governance. So I think this is a gap that the literature could go a little bit more ahead, and I would hope future researchers would, including myself, future research would delve into this a little bit further. And this is the main question I'll put forward.
Great. Yeah, I think one of the things that's so interesting about Ostrom and Zelizer, particularly in like looking at them together, is that they both were able to look out in the world and say, we're seeing all these things that are more complex and more challenging than some of these theories or some of these ideas might expect, right? We had a lot of mainstream theories that said, you know, we shouldn't expect activity that could, you know, deal with commons in a way that's fruitful without kind of external forces, or we shouldn't see certain interactions. And they were like, well, obviously we do. So we have to figure that out, right? And I think that deep context and the attachment to like what's really going on in the world is really important. And Crystal, your chapter brings us into studying that from the distant past. And I think whenever I read your work, I think about how much economics should learn from these other disciplines, because there's so much data and context that we have to figure out. So I want to throw the same questions at you, sort of first off, and that what motivated you to tackle the chapter the way you did? And what would you say is the important stuff that people should glean from the chapter, kind of the Cliff Notes version of what it's about?
Thanks, Stephanie. And you actually brought up kind of my exact draw to this research, was that I see archaeology as the data minefield of human history. I mean, you want to really get a sense of the diversity of human arrangements for economic problems. And archaeology has a society in any context you can imagine. So the kind of testing ground that my discipline can provide to the larger understanding of you know, either behavioral or institutional economics is wild. And so I was really excited and drawn into this chapter as a way to advertise, hey, the kind of field work, you know, that Ostrom and Zelizer advocate for, we have all that available. And so much of what I think mainstream economics forgets is about particularly these non-market exchanges and these non-market societies. And just because they're non or extra market doesn't mean they're not participating in important economic activities and important ecological cooperation devices. So my hope out of this chapter is, again, to emphasize that we need to take a wider lens into what we think about in terms of economic activity, and that there are so many different examples of humans choosing cooperation and collaboration in really diverse ways for really diverse settings. And I think that's it widens our appreciation for human resilience.
Oh, I really like that. I think, you know, sometimes our disciplinary boundaries or kind of the cleanest models might actually give us a lot of reason to hesitate about resilience. And in a world where there's so many challenges and crises and problems, the fact that I think both Ostrom and Zelizer provide some optimism, like, look at how we can do that over time. But I think that the historical data that we have to look at to see how kind of persistent and resilient we can be in challenging circumstances is so important.
And to anticipate your next question, actually, that was one thing I was really appreciative of. I had the opportunity to visit Mercatus last year, and I was at a workshop at the same time that another group was discussing our book, which was intimidating. But it was what I really appreciated is the kind of questions I got from other colleagues, you know, in diverse fields. Were, oh, I didn't realize that Indigenous societies had this kind of regime. And now I have all these questions about the economic activities of Native Americans prior to colonization. This is a population that I didn't even think about in terms of economic exchange. So I really appreciated that this interdisciplinary procedure allows us to access different parts of the world in different time periods and different experiments in terms of human organization.
And I would like to comment that I really appreciate what you're saying, Christo, about how we can also look into the past to get glimpses of the present and including the future, that maybe sometimes we might repeat some types of work that perhaps we could have found in the past and understood from the past. So having a nice historical look is always extremely fundamental. And one thing I found quite interesting from also doing this project and anticipating one of your next questions, Stephanie, is the fact that both of them, both Zelizer and Ostrom, they seem to be very focused on the idea that any regime that works in practice has to work in theory. And I find this is one of the most important takeaway messages, at least from also the theoretical developments of this work, because it takes the focus out of building theory for the purpose of theory, but looking at reality and all the variety of forms of economic organization, monetary and non-monetary, forms of exchange of varied forms across the globe, and that we need to also look into, for example, Global South. And Global South is a very encompassing term anyhow, but looking into different ways of organizing that not the typical Western modern society. So this is something that both can bring us to, the importance of diversity of forms of organization, diversity of economic organization, and the fact that if there is something happening in reality, it must work in theory, not the other way around. We cannot just dump theory in reality and make it fit, but we have to look into reality and try to understand what is the gap in our rational understanding. this was really interesting for me to understand a little bit more clearly that such a simple insight, it's actually present in more than one discipline, and we can, as researchers, be inspired by it.
Yeah, that's great. I think, you know, one of the things that's really interesting about this too is they add so much diversity into the options of governance and exchange and interacting, kind of from particularly what mainstream economics and sociology looked like, you know, in the past, in the recent past. But one of the things that's really interesting about their work too is, and I think, you know, Crystal's example of having, you know, people reading her chapter and realizing how much it connects is there's so much commonality as well, right? Like meaning, governance, exchange does happen in all these places, and it's not incredibly new, and it's not necessarily incredibly Western if we look at it from this wider, broader perspective. And I think that adds a lot of maybe optimism as well, right? Like the fact that we can, in a more globally connected world, see those commonalities if we look for it, right? I think is something that's really important that comes out of their work. Moving on to our next question, we've talked about it a little bit, about kind of the gaps in the research and kind of what you've laid on the table of, you know, encouraging others to pick up, but sort of just more explicitly talking about, you know, what do you think is next for people interested in doing this type of research, whether it's what you're inspired to do next from this or what you hope others pick up as well?
So again, one of my hopes in this chapter was to think about archaeology as a data set for understanding the very complex and diverse economic arrangements that humans have done for millions of years. And I think anthropologists have been hesitant to use the terms economics to talk about exchange. You know, anthropologists are very comfortable with gifting and debt and those kind of concepts, but to use explicitly economic terminology to talk about this activity, I think there's a lot of room for growth. And doing that would allow for, again, the data sets that we're able to bring to the table to be better recognized. So my kind of hopes is that I used one case study in this chapter, but you can look at every society, you know, in human history and apply these kind of lenses to it. What are the examples of when collaboration works? What are the examples when it doesn't work? My hope is that by applying some more of these economic sociality kind of regimes will allow us to put more, I don't want to say more weight into economic activity in the past, but to better appreciate that the same mechanisms that we are studying today have happened for a long time, and the dignity of those exchanges are really important to recognize. So my hope is just that someone reads this chapter and says, oh, I should talk to the archaeologist in my department and figure out what society arrangements are we missing? And I hope it goes the opposite way as well. Of an archaeologist be like, oh, well, you know, I've always thought about exchange and trade, but I've never put it in explicitly economic term, right? And I think by having those interdisciplinary conversations on a greater diversity of arrangements, we can have a better appreciation for human behavior in general.
Great. Carolina?
Yes, so I'm going to answer that in two parts. One related to more what I would like to do next and what I think would be maybe relevant for others. I very recently came across a text by Lévi-Strauss, one anthropologist that was considered a structural anthropologist in the 20th century, one of the most important we had. And in the text, he said very clearly that anthropologists should get more often in contact with economists, so to understand each other and, you know, get a grasp of also contemporary societies where even if non-monetary exchange is present, we cannot deny how monetary exchange and economic structures do guide us. So that we need to get together a little bit more. So I think in general, I would very much hope that the field of economic anthropology, economic sociology integrates a little bit more with recent studies in economics. So even when it comes to simple, not simple concepts, but more like recent concepts, when you think of, for example, self-signaling, warm glow, topics that are quite used in economics, and they do have also passed in anthropology and vice versa, I think it will be very interesting to get together a little bit more. In the end, we're talking about the same societies, but from different lenses, and for sure with slightly different phenomena too, but there are ways to get together. And what I would like to do more directly, well, I am in the field of arts and culture, like culture here, not in an anthropological sense, but culture in a bit narrower sense, which is cultural goods, creative industries, and so on and so forth. And one thing that I lack a little bit in my field is the understanding of forms of organization, not only forms of economic organization in general, forms of exchange, but also typical formal institutions, how governance works. So I would like to, at least from my research perspective, in delve a little bit further into mapping different forms of organization and showing how this diversity of human interaction is also present in the arts and how that translates into different forms of art. So when we look into art, I think we're looking to a domain that shows a wide diversity of expressions, and perhaps we can also learn from that how different economic exchange come across. So maybe we can use this domain to learn something about economic coordination and not only apply economic coordination towards the arts. So this is the movement I would like to do a little bit more. And surely the notions of governance, rules and use, institutions, and meaning of money and non-monetary exchange are extremely fundamental.
Thank you. So you know, one of the things we're talking about is just how much fruit there is for kind of continuing in this direction and being interdisciplinary. For folks who are interested in this discussion and the book, and they want to then dig into what's next, what books or thinkers would you recommend that could continue to maybe widen people's perspectives or, you know, kind of follow in the footsteps of Ostrom and Salazar?
Well, I have to make a shout out to an author that maybe listeners are already familiar with. We all love Dr. Virgil Storr. So Understanding the Culture of Markets is a very fundamental book that I really appreciated coming in from an interdisciplinary perspective. For folks who want to know more about archaeology, particularly of North America, I might recommend the book Facing East from Indian Country. That is a book that takes radically different perspective to colonization than, say, 1491 or even Guns, Germs, and Steel, which folks might be more familiar with. Again, turning ahead on normal narratives of what colonization looks like.
What I would suggest next is looking a little bit into Salazar, for sure. So Negotiating Intimacy, if I'm not wrong, this is the name of the book. One of the cornerstone studies she did, I think one of the first, and which she looks into also insurance industry and the role of some public debates related to household issues, right? So how to deal with money in a very private, intimate setting. I think this is really important work where we can see how economic coordination happens in a household in also non-monetary forms. So I think this is a good way to expand into the work of Salazar too. Well, my domain is also the art, so I would happily suggest Hans Abing with Why Are Artists Poor, which the title is a little bit, you know, closed in a sense. It says something rather than questions. It says, well, are artists poor? But in fact, that's not really the point of the book, but mostly showing how money also has a very important meaning in artistic circles and how this creates a certain type of economic coordination that is particular of the domain of the arts. Olav Helthaus on the art markets and how prices are talked. So there's the work called Talking Prices, which was certainly one of the most important books I read regarding the combination of economic sociology and typical economics, right? One of the typical things we do in economics is discussing prices. But then we find out prices are also talked and they're not objectively defined. So this is something revealing about forms of economic exchange, I find. So I think there is a lot to learn from these very specific domains that give us a glimpse of our ways of behaving and ways of doing economic and non-economic exchange outside of them. So I would suggest those. And I think on a general level, I also often talk about Marshall Salling's an anthropologist that also had some interesting observations about the role of economics and the economy in general. So I think the work of Marshall Salling can be very interesting.
Great, thank you. Is there anything that you'd like to express about this topic or get to the listeners that I haven't asked from our questions?
I don't have a particular final observation or something I would like to make come across other than what I have already said. But I would reinforce, as just to finish our talk, to, if you can, if you have the intention and personal motivation of going interdisciplinary, you should. And there are many different paths you can do that. So here we are providing one of them, right, that puts together economic sociology, institutional economics, but there are various others. So I would strongly suggest people that already have this inclination to look forward to methodological and theoretical options to do that. And speak for myself, I'll be available to speak to anybody that would send me a message and continue the conversation.
I'll just echo Carolina's sentiments. Stay curious, explore these interdisciplinary topics. There's a lot of viable ground here. And I'm looking forward to even more case studies that take up these approaches and apply them to new realms.
Excellent. Well, thank you both for taking the time to talk with me today and be a part of this project. And as we've been talking, hopefully this is just the beginning of an ongoing conversation with us, but also others too, who dig into these ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Hayek Program Podcast. To learn more about the research, scholars, and work of the Hayek Program, visit hayek.mercatus.org. For more information about graduate student fellowship opportunities for students at Mason as well as at universities across the globe, please visit students.mercatus.org. We hope you recommend students to our programs or consider applying yourself.